Hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm Bonner Spring, and today my guest is Serafina Nova Glass. Serafina is an Edgar Award-nominated author. Her book, On a Quiet Street, was named a New York Times Book Review Summer Read and an Amazon Editor's Pick, among other praise, and she recently sold the film rights to Mar Vista Entertainment. Her fifth book, The Vacancy in Room 10, which we will be featuring today, releases in the U.S. on April 9th, and she's currently working on her sixth novel. Serafina is an assistant professor and playwright in residence at the University of Texas Arlington, and Publishers Weekly has named her a writer to watch. Excellent. And welcome to Crime Wave, Serafina.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you're an award-winning playwright who teaches film studies too. So could you please start us off by giving our listeners your backstory? How did you get into playwriting and then writing prose?
You know, I think when you're in college, I kind of went into theater for a creative outlet. I really feel like back then, you think of even the plays that you perform at the theater as something that other people a long time ago wrote, and you know, the theater performs them. I never thought of it as something I could write myself. Like, you know, it didn't seem accessible. Being a novelist or actually, you know, a commercially published author seemed like such a pipe dream. You know, I could maybe teach and stay in the English theater world by immersing myself in, you know, a university environment, but who actually makes it as a writer? So it didn't really dawn on me that that was possible, to be honest. So playwriting was kind of accessible because I was able to write some plays in my sophomore year of college and actually put them up on stage. So you got that sort of satisfaction to see your work live. And then, you know, I kind of fell in love with writing from there and just stayed in the theater until 2019, actually, pretty recently, when I actually moved into writing books.
That's great. Now, what inspired you to write your first crime novel?
I tell this story a lot. I was directing a play at the university, and I live about an hour. I live in Dallas. The university is closer to Fort Worth. So I was commuting, and I listened to my first audiobook that was a Ruth Ware book. So it was a thriller, the first thriller I'd ever listened to. And I just fell in love with it. And I said, what am I doing? I need to be writing thrillers. And so I went home and just started. That was October 2018. I went home and started. And by Christmas, I'd finished it and got an agent by January. And by the end of January, I had like a 3-book deal with HarperCollins. So it was a whirlwind really fast.
That is absolutely amazing. And I want everyone listening to understand that this is not the usual trajectory that writers that writers take, right? That's absolutely wonderful. I'm guessing from what you just said that the transition from writing plays to writing novels was a pretty smooth one for you.
I always tell my students writing plays is like classical training in writing. I think it's the hardest genre. I mean, to think about keeping people entertained with nothing blowing up, without scene changes, without a lot of action, without, the inner dialogue. It's just, you know, stage audience, and you have to capture them without all those tricks. So I think it's probably, to me, the hardest genre to write. And so when you start there, everything else, it's never easy, but everything else seems more approachable than playwriting for me, because I think that it really is the more difficult genre or medium.
Yeah, thank you. I never really thought about it that way. But what you say is true. All you get when you're a playwright is lines of dialogue and stage directions. You don't get the it was a dark and stormy night or whatever the atmosphere in that you do so very, very well. Now, I love The Vacancy in Room 10, your new book that's just coming out. It was a real tour de force on who to trust, right? And the characters, the very characters that we're not sure about trusting are all such interesting people, delightful people. The story is told from dual alternating perspectives of the two main characters, who are Cass and Anna. So would you please introduce us to them?
Yeah, so Anna is, it starts off with her losing her husband in a phone call, and she hears a shot, a noise, and he's gone. And we're we're looking at the story through her eyes, trying to figure out what happened to him. So she goes to this rundown motel, the Sycamores, and tries to sort of follow the leads to figure out, you know, the crazy things he was saying on that phone call, what they mean and where is he and what happened. And then Cass is at the Sycamores rundown motel for very different reasons. She's sort of lost everything and is down and out. And she is, you know, a little bit feisty, take no crap kind of personality. And she's a bit jaded and kind of seeking revenge on men in general for kind of what happened to her. And she starts a little bit of a sex scam out of the motel, and things sort of go terribly wrong for her when she messes with the wrong person. And then there's two stories collide. Everything that happens at the Sycamores with all the seedy characters are very intertwined. And even these two women don't know each other beforehand, their two stories are incredibly connected as well, until, you know, it all comes to a crazy wild end.
To an amazing, crazy and wild ending. Yes, for everyone who's going to read this book, and I hope you will, it is amazing. Stay tuned for it, please. You know, it's not just Cass and Anna either, Serafina. It's the entire crew at the Sycamores. You know, you've got the, you didn't mention this when you were talking about them, but the other people, many of the other people who live there have formed something that you call, or people call, the pool mom gang, the women and their children who hang out at the pool all day, Jackie, Crystal, and Rose. How do I want to ask this? How do you get in the mind of characters? I mean, are we talking personal knowledge here or what?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, I lived a lot of places and, you know, went to grad school on both coasts, traveled around a lot. Just, I think I've probably stayed at that particular motel a few times and decided to backpack here and there and everywhere throughout my entire 20s. So I think I've met all of those moms and they are sort of gritty and, almost maybe a little bit of a risk to write, because you either love them or don't get them at all or don't relate at all. And sometimes I worry that if I'm not writing, you know, On a Quiet Street was successful with sort of upper middle class women. And so I write something a little bit grittier and not everybody necessarily connects to it the same way, but I have so much fun writing it. I think this was my favorite book so far to write because, you know, each of them just have their own really unique personalities. And I don't really hold back just letting them be as quirky and, multifaceted as I wanted to, and maybe in the past they would have. So I think you have to meet them to get it, but there are some supporting characters that almost are main characters in this story for sure.
That's really interesting. I would absolutely love to spend the afternoon hanging out with them. That's absolutely true. And you know, you sort of anticipated the next thing I was going to ask you, because anyone who knows me or knows my writing knows that I'm a sucker for the unusual settings. And you talked just a little bit about staying in those motels. And I need you to understand that I stayed in those motels too. And yeah, you can do that. Yeah, you can absolutely do that. So I guess you've really set us up with pretty much all that you can say about the puzzle that's at the heart of that. It's always one of the hardest parts about doing a podcast about mysteries and thrillers, that there's a limit, you know, to how much that we can say. But when Cass and Anna are now both at the Sycamores and their stories begin to collide. So Anna's finding out things about her husband, maybe go just a small bit further down that, just as a tease. Can you do that?
Yeah. So she, her husband has said that he's really sorry, but he can't do this anymore. And he thinks, and he's killed somebody. And the police are investigating this suicide pretty cut and dry. So she moves into his apartment. He's an artist and he was renting a studio and using one of these small apartments as a studio. So she goes and starts to stay there and gets to know all the strange characters at this apartment building and is trying to figure out. Yeah, it's hard. I almost gave a big twist away. I got to step back.
That's quite enough. Yeah. Okay. So
she pulls up the thread and she finds out a lot. Put it that way.
Gotcha. Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. That's sort of exactly where you need to stop there, because from there it gets really, really twisted and very, very, very interesting. Are you someone who plots all the way through your books, or do you pants it more or less? Or
100% plotter. I was talking with my agent recently. She sort of like was like, well, if you, because I know you mentioned I was working on book 6, but I finished that about a month ago. And so I'm thinking about book 7 now. And when you're just starting trying to think of ideas from scratch out of absolutely nowhere, she's like, well, what if you tried to pants it a little bit? I mean, I think I've actually shuddered at the thought of not knowing everything that's going to happen, because I actually think I start with the twist in a sense, usually when I'm writing a book, which is I find people think is odd. So I guess maybe, I don't know if a lot of other writers do that. But I think I ask myself questions, like in my very first book, Someone's Listening. I was listening to this podcast driving across country at night years ago. And it was this, I won't say the name of the person. I mean, it's dated at this point, but really hardcore advice. Like, you know, if your child is doing this, you need to kick them out of the house, cut them off, like really, you know, incredibly strict, harsh advice. It was a call-in, kind of like Frasier, you know, calling advice on the radio. She gives you, she only knows your life for 5 seconds and tells you what to do. And I'm like, I wonder what the ripple effect of that is. Like, what happens to that person who gets that 2 second piece of advice and applies it? And, you know, what kind of ripple effect that can have in a life? So it was that question that I asked myself to start writing it, which to me kind of lends itself to the end, you know, like it touched on how that twist is going to happen at the end. And I was satisfied with that, that would be surprising, and kind of started back at the beginning. So I make sure it's outlined to heck and back, and that I know exactly how it's going to end. Mm-hmm. I don't fill it in so much that it limits the creativity, but I need to know, you know, where the stepping stones are.
I am so relieved to hear you say that. I've interviewed so many people who say, I let myself be creative, and I go, wait, you're writing a mystery and you have to get from point A to point B, or you're writing a thriller, and they're totally different way. And how the hell do you do that kind of thing without knowing where you're going? Now, right. I will say this, and this has come up in a couple of other episodes that I've done. You know, there's that whole, I'm driving down the road, the dark road in the car, and the headlights are shining, you know, where I'm going. You can take the whole road that way, just knowing headlight distance in front of you. But I still like to know the destination. I mean, you know where you're going. You know the beginning. You know your house, and you know the end.
And if you think of writing as rewriting, that might be okay. I think that I do very little editing after the fact. I think I go back and forth with my editor once, maybe twice, with light editing, because I'm so heavy on the front end. And I don't want to see these people when I'm done with the book. I'm like so sick of them. I could never write a series. I don't want to reread it. I don't want to listen to it when it comes out on audio. I mean, I had a great time with them, but then I'm done. And so I don't want this heavy editing process. So I just want to make sure that, like, you know, if you see that the headlights ahead, you're taking a lot of risks. If I know that I'm going to reveal, you know, the gun, somebody got shot in chapter 8. Well, where do they get the gun? I need to set that up in chapter 4. Let's say, you know, it's those pieces of really crafting it that I could not imagine doing without plotting. God bless them if they can do that. I'm impressed. Don't get it though. You know, I couldn't do it myself. I've got to organize it in a spreadsheet, basically.
Yeah, basically. And that's why you're able to write as quickly, apparently, as you do, because you've got the plot twists worked out and you know where you're starting and you know where the end is. If you just do one back and forth with editors, you know, as opposed to when I got my first agent, and of course that was the first book too, my first book. You know, it ended up getting published, starting at about page 82 of my original manuscript or something like that. You know, it was all these usual first things. It sounds like your method has made that not necessary for you. That's great.
Yeah, well, by some sort of magic, I don't know how I decided to start like that. Maybe it's because I was so intimidated by the process. That's the only way I could comprehend doing it. Mm-hmm. I guess it's work to not have to do, you know, a lot of after writing, but
you're sort of doing a lot of the work ahead of time, and you know, then you know where you're going, and it's a little bit smoother to mix metaphors.
So when I say
smoother sailing,
Right. So when I say I write a book generally in 3 or 4 months, yeah, but there was a couple months of like that other work too, for sure. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. No, I totally understand it. I hope I'm not putting you exactly on the spot here, but I read once your advice about for other fiction writers about basically keeping going. I want all our listeners, particularly listeners who are writers, to hear this.
I don't remember the numbers, but it was some statistic now that I recall about, like, you know, if you actually finish a book, you're, you know, just there relatively high chances of getting that published, because some astronomical number of people think they have a book in them and start a book, but they never actually finish it. So if you're somebody who can finish that last chapter, you know, you have... everything's revisable. You have a story, like, you know, find the good editor, find, you know, somebody to help shape it if it's not in great shape. But just to get to that point, I mean, your chances are just kind of sore from there.
Right. What I took away from that was, you know, put your butt in the chair and write your story, you know, because so many people give up. Before I got serious about writing, I had, I don't know, a dozen first chapters, you know, all out there, but I didn't keep going, and I didn't work it. I didn't get published until I got to the end of the book. So you have written book six. And could you tell us just a little bit about it, please?
So it's, I said, that Vacancy was my favorite, but now this one is actually my favorite. It's the title is pending. I titled it The Oleanders because it takes place at a retirement home called The Oleanders, and the folks that live there call themselves Olies. So it tied in, but we already know it's going to, the title will change. It comes out February 2025. And it's set in northern Minnesota in the dead of winter. And so it's just snow and ice fishing and flannel shirts. Kind of feels like maybe Fargo meets... okay, I don't know what other what other example to give, but it just has that northern snowy claustrophobic feel, and it follows the stories of three women: Florence, who's one of the residents at the Oleanders, and then Mac, and then Shelby. And there's an attack, there's a missing person, and the Oleanders are going to try to solve the mystery, but they get... it hits too close to home and very embroiled in it. And so again, like I love to do, all three of those stories weave together until we realize how connected they actually are. And hopefully you don't suspect, you know, what the truth is and the big reveal at the end. But I'm really loving the two or three female perspectives intertwining. I just think it's so much fun to, with the pacing, you know, I've sort of found, I don't know how I would go back to just one person perspective, because you get a switch back and forth and it just makes it, you know, the pacing kind of chip along. So I really fell in love. I feel like the Oleanders are the new Pool Girls. They're just a quirky set of folks that, you know, I always felt like there was no place in thriller for humor, but I've let myself just let them be naturally funny and weird. And so I'm falling in love with writing more, just being myself and letting that naturally occur instead of trying to make it so serious all the time, you know? So it's my favorite one so far.
And number 8 will be your favorite one when you get there. Yes.
Of course.
That's wonderful. Serafina, before we go off the air, can you tell our listeners how to, where you're most active online, how they can find you?
Oh man, I need to be better about social media for sure. I am on Instagram and Facebook, and that's really it. I'm on the only Serafina Nova Glass, so I'm very easy to find anywhere you search my name. At least there's that. There's really not another one, so you can't miss me if you Google. But yeah, I'm trying to be more active on Instagram, although sometimes I forget I have it. So that's a goal. But then definitely on Facebook. I think that's the place that I post the most and share news and upcoming stuff.
That's absolutely wonderful. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us today, Serafina. I hope you have tremendous success with A Vacancy in Room 10. As I said earlier, I thought it was an absolutely wonderful book. And I hope that you will come back to visit with whatever title The Oleanders turn out to be.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure.